This is Spectator Radio. If you'd like to subscribe to The Spectator, you can get 12 issues for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Welcome to a special edition of Spectator Podcast, looking at what has in recent years become one of the biggest issues in politics, what to do about plastics. Since its invention about 100 years ago, plastic has become a facet of our daily lives. We've been recycling it for years, dutifully taking out the boxes outside our front drive every Wednesday, but we haven't been recycling very much. Of the 300 million tonnes of plastic produced a year, only about 10% is recycled. And even then, it's not so straightforward. Plastic bottles, shampoo bottles, they're fine to be recycled, but plastic bags and food takeaway containers, plastic cutlery, it's a rather different story, at least it is right now. But all this is changing. Just as technology is leaping forward in wind and solar power, advances are being made in the kind of plastic that can be recycled. So might we end up with plastic waste one day being seen as an energy source in the same way that fossil fuels are now? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Julie Hill, Chair of the Waste and Resource Action Programme, Michelle Norbin from Sundry, which owns Lucozade and Ribena and is therefore a pretty big manufacturer of plastic bottles, and finally, Kate Geraghty from Down, one of the world's largest producers of plastic, which is kindly sponsoring this podcast. So, Kate, I'd like to start with you. Your company, Down, has said that plastic is too valuable a resource to be thrown away or lost to landfill. Now, that's a funny way of putting it, because you could argue if it's single-use plastic isn't a resource, it's just something to be chucked into a big hole in the ground somewhere. Do you think this is going to change?
Yes, I most certainly do. I think in the past we have focused very much on working with our value chain to develop the most resource-efficient plastics packaging that has delivered CO2 benefits versus other materials or has helped to extend the shelf life of food.
Right, so the carbon footprint of the plastic you produce is going down, but we've got the problem of what you do with it once you've made it.
Yeah. So our focus has changed dramatically in recent years in response to this plastic waste crisis. And we're now working with our supply chain, retailers, brand owners, etc., to incorporate recycled content into plastic and also to design plastics packaging so that it's fully recyclable at end of life.
Right. Now, Julie Hill, fully recyclable, that is quite a phrase because, sure, we're all used to putting plastics into the recycle box, but we all know it's very difficult. Some of it can be recycled, some of it can't, and it's very difficult to know which is which. So right now, how much of plastic can be recycled, broadly speaking? Is able to be recycled, not is recycled?
Well, we estimate that plastics that are capable of reuse, recycling or composting is probably around two-thirds.
Two-thirds? And that's pretty green, greener than I would have thought.
And less than half of that actually is recycled.
Right.
So the RAP's plastic pack targets aim to turn that into 100% and 70% actually recycled.
Okay, so right now about two-thirds you can recycle it, but we're only actually doing it with one-third, so that's still a lot of waste.
Well, less than half, yeah, a lot of waste.
But isn't it a bit of a problem that consumers are unlikely to know what's recyclable and what's not? So you need to sort all this. Somebody somewhere would need to take what's in a plastic recycled bottle and put it into categories. That must be pretty difficult.
Well, it should be labelled. Good practice is that plastics are labelled and they're all good and less good ways of communicating that to people. But a lot of the work RAP does is aimed at informing people about different plastics and trying to make sure that it's clear what goes where.
So, Julie, we also hear of a new sort of plastic, bioplastics, apparently made from plants. Now, they sound greener, but isn't it true that they do release a lot of methane gas when they degrade? So in some other aspects, they're not as good for the environment as standard plastic.
I think the things we've got to separate out here, there are bio-derived plastics. So plastic, after all, is a molecule. You can get that molecule from plant sources or fresh plant sources rather than the old squash plant sources that are oil. It's exactly the same thing. Just like oil-based plastics, it can be recycled. Mm. But then as well, you've got biodegradable, meaning it'll break down under certain conditions, which people think, well, OK, that sounds great. But sometimes that's only under very particular conditions, like an industrial plant. And if those plastics don't reach that sort of plant, if they're not collected and separated and put in that plant, if they end up in landfill instead, they'll become methanogenic. So that's not an advantage. So we've got two different things. Bio-based, is that recyclable or not? Is it also biodegradable, and where do we put it? So these are things I think people are only just really starting to understand.
Right, so bioplastic isn't necessarily biodegradable.
Correct. No.
Now, Michelle Norman, your company, Sundry, has been on the front line here. A couple of years ago, the head of the Recycling Association singled you guys out, saying that Lucozade bottles were, well, he used a rather unkind phrase, the villains of the recycling world. So is that why your company is intending to shift to sustainable packaging within 10 years' time? Also, what do we mean by sustainable, and how exactly are you going to manage that?
Yeah, so 100% sustainable packaging for us has two meanings. The first one is that the material that the bottle is made out of is either from plastic that's been used before, call it secondhand plastic, so things that you know, everyone at home puts in the recycling bin in good faith and they hope it gets recycled again and it ends up back in our bottles. And we also need to introduce an element of new plastic into that bottle as well, so it doesn't degrade in quality or colour. And so what we've chosen to do is use plastic that's been made from plant sources. In our case, it would be wood chips and sugarcane biomass. So it's basically waste material that comes from the paper industry or from the sugar industry. So we're utilising food waste, as it were, which is in essence plant-based material. So we'll use a small element of that that goes into our bottles. That means that we will no longer be reliant on plastic that is made brand new and that comes as a derivative from oil. So that's the first part. And then the second part, in order to be fully sustainable, we have to be able to recycle our bottles. And I think you made the point earlier about, you know, when somebody at home pops it into a recycling bin, they have a full expectation that it'll go through the process and it'll get made into something else. And that doesn't currently happen. And brands such as ours at the moment are not being fully recycled either, because the way that they're currently designed is not right for their current UK infrastructure. So we're actually redesigning our packaging as well, so to go to Julie's point, that it doesn't break the loop, so it can be recycled into bottles time and time again. So we're changing the sleeves on our bottles. That's the plastic wrapping that goes around the outside of our Ribena and Lucozade bottles, and we're redesigning that, and we'll start to see those new bottles coming out for members of the public from next year. So it's two facets for sustainable packaging, how we define it.
Right. I mean, I went to Pret a Manger for lunch today and I took a plastic fork out with me, which I must admit I didn't think twice about until I was preparing for this podcast. And I came across this quote by Frans Zimmermann from the European Commission. I'll read it out, because I must admit I don't normally quote the EU with much approval. But he said he wanted to declare war on, quote, single-use plastics that take 5 seconds to produce, are used for 5 minutes, and then take 500 years to break down again. Now, Kate Geraghty, is that the case? 500 years to break down the plastic fork I just used to have my Pret salad?
Well, I think, first of all, we should look at what is a single-use plastic. Cutlery is an example of that. A lot of the on-the-go food for that. And as you know, there's a lot of action in the UK and at the European level to address that. But a lot of single-use plastic, I think, is a little bit confusing for some people. Single-use plastics can be, for example, medical equipment or the packaging that equips medical equipment and has a very important purpose. And a lot of single-use plastic, you know, has very important functions.
When you see a syringe in hospital, quite often that's in plastic containers.
But for very good
there's
reason.
There's a lot of that now. I mean, of course, 20 years ago there wasn't, but now there is, and that makes everybody 100% sure that it's clean.
It's hygienic and sterile and clean. To your point about biodegradation, yes, there are concerns. I mean, that's why we see issues with plastics waste in the environment. It's not degrading. And biodegradable plastics, those that are available, such as oxo-degradable plastics, which are being banned at the moment through the single-use plastics regulations, they can actually increase littering. So that's just building on your point there, the confusion between bio-based and bioplastics. What we want to see is plastics waste not entering the environment. It doesn't belong there. We want to ensure that plastic retains its value at end of life, so it becomes a resource for us to be able to manufacture new plastic.
Right.
But I think to put this in a broader frame, if we're thinking of plastics as an exemplar for the forthcoming circular economy, recycling is one strategy, but actually a more effective strategy, certainly in carbon terms, is reuse. So where can we develop the reuse strategies for these?
So what's the difference between recycling and reusing?
Well, reuse is using the same thing again,
right,
but rather than breaking it down into parts.
My plastic fork, you mean the bottle? I mean, it's pretty, a lot of these things, it's pretty difficult to see them being used again, unless I'm going to put my plastic fork in the dishwasher.
Yes, or if you took your own
conventional fork. Realistically, someone as disorganized as me is not good. Now, perhaps I should change my ways. Perhaps I should be taking one of these reusable cups like Michael Gove's so fond of and doing it.
Well, indeed. And the reusable cup, partly thanks to Mr. Gove taking it into a cabinet meeting, is indeed catching on. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really. The behavioural aspects of this, which is very much what RAT concentrates on alongside the technical ones, are or should be to really understand where we're going to have the biggest reduction in impact and to reuse items, whether that is the reusable coffee cup or cutlery, is always going to have a better result than recycling, because that always involves extra energy. It always involves some sort of process. So I just want to put that in the circular economy context.
Sure. Michelle Norman, when I was young, growing up in the Highlands, you'd be thrilled if you were a young boy to come across a discarded iron brew bottle because they were worth 20 pence. You'd pick up the bottle, you'd take it back, you would get your money off whatever you wanted to buy. It gave you a huge incentive to fish them out of litter bins, to make sure nothing was ever going to waste in that department. So people do look back and think, hang on a minute, we used to have a slightly more circular, if you want to call it that, economy than we do now with glass bottles. The milkman used to drop off bottles, you would take them, pour the milk out, wash them, give them back to the milkman. So what happened to all that? Can't we just go back to that? Or is it the fact that the glass is somehow worse for the environment in other ways?
You know, I think there's probably a number of solutions that we need to do. There's no one big thing that's going to solve the plastic waste issue. There's reducing our use of plastics. The plastics that we do use them efficiently and resourcefully. And then look at other ways that we can get our drinks delivered. So reusable and refillable bottles is one way. I mean, you can look to Germany. We have a business over there as well where glass is used and refilled and collected and washed and sorted and then comes back again to members of the public on a fairly regular basis. And they also have plastic bottles that act in the same way, that are incredibly heavy set, durable, but they, you know, they get collected like your old milkman and taken away, washed and then brought back. So there are places where we do have examples where that happens, but they've been systems that have been in place for many years where people are used to them. So we would have to think about how do we basically have a whole scale change in how we deliver drinks and food and have that whole infrastructure in place. Not to say it can't be done, it's just say that there are probably a number of solutions on that. In terms of the older bottle up in Scotland, yeah, I definitely remember the Corona Pop Man and basically returning my bottle every Friday and getting some money back when I was a child. And, you know, deposit return systems that have been put forward as a potential solution to increase the recycling and collection rates of plastic bottles is something that will inevitably arrive in the next 2 to 3 years across both Scotland and England and Wales.
Well,
So
Michelle, do you think that's something policymakers should pursue then? I mean, trying to encourage kind of paid return schemes, trying to come up with a system. I mean, you know, when you go to Sweden, if you've got a big plastic bottle, you can take that to the supermarket, you get money back at the supermarket. So in other countries, they do seem to have a better means of reuse and repaying. In other words, there has to be a financial component for this, because when you've got a financial component, you'll start to get this to work in a way where currently we're relying on people's good conscience to recycle. If you manage to, do you think policymakers can come up with a...
I think deposit return systems will be a very good test of whether or not members of the public are prepared to, A, pay a little bit extra at the beginning in the knowledge they'll get that money back, and will they actually make that additional effort to take their bottles back to a return point. So let's see how that works. But I do think that there has to be a way that we can have a number of different systems operating. I'm not saying the UK is going to be the best example of it at the moment, but we definitely, as a producer, are looking at all possibilities and delivery systems and working with retailers to what can be done as well. So there are some very progressive retailers in the UK who are starting to look at refillable packaging, and that's something that is obviously of interest. But I think deposit return systems will be that first step that we need to encourage consumers to take their products back, get something reward in exchange, and then get them into that mindset of basically take what you already have and bring it back to where it started.
Right. But Julie, I mean, some of this, I remember reading a DEFRA study a while ago where they worked out that a cotton shopping bag, we're all familiar with these things now, the so-called bags for life, that they would have to be used 173 times before they became responsible for fewer carbon emissions than a plastic bag. That's because cotton is a pretty intensive crop requiring large amounts of water and fertilizer. So it's very difficult, isn't it? I mean, sure, we can think that plastic is a bogeyman, but you can pick up cotton and then find it's actually a lot worse.
Yes, all true. Yes, and certainly wraps work spans textiles. So we know about the impacts of cotton. We know we need to reduce those. There is more sustainable cotton that has lower carbon and water impacts. But yes, you're right. If we're going for reuse options like that, then they need to be used thoroughly. They need to become the norm. And certainly it's not going to help if we just pile up cupboards full of reusable cups and bags and drinking bottles while carrying on with some of the disposable ones as well. There's a complete sort of lifestyle and mindset shift that's got to carry on with us fully aware of what we're using.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Norman, do you think that's going to be a part of the problem, that right now people, by and large, pretty crudely, think that plastics are bad and alternatives to plastics are good? But as we're discussing, some plastics are better than others, some are recyclable, others aren't. You're going to come up with bioplastics, which, you know, will sound better. But do you think it's going to be a while before the distinction between different sorts of plastics and indeed different sorts of cottons is something that consumers are going to be able to get in their heads very easily?
Yeah, and I think that debate around plastic at the moment has focused on plastic is bad, when actually I think it probably needs to be balanced and reframed as plastic waste is bad and needs absolutely to be stopped right now. But there is an element of plastics are good, they're safe, they're durable, they're lightweight, they have a lower carbon footprint, and when used efficiently and being resource efficient, when used responsibly, so being disposed of responsibly, is actually a very viable alternative for the future. And that might not be the most popular thing that people want to hear, but actually it's a very pragmatic way of looking at things. It ensures that, you know, plastic, when used in the right way, is a valuable resource. I mean, as a company, we spend, as you can imagine, millions of pounds every year on our buying in our plastic to make our bottles. So why would we want that money to be thrown away as plastic waste? We want to get our investment back and reuse and reuse and reuse it again. So I think it's about looking at this from a holistic point of view. How can we make the best of what we've already got? How can we look at alternatives to satisfy consumers on a number of different levels, but having been very balanced and pragmatic as we approach this, and making sure that plastic waste absolutely is the issue that we have to tackle and stop happening for the future?
Yes, certainly from the RAP perspective, we'd completely agree with that. So our Plastics Pact, which is the alliance of businesses and with help from government, Michelle's company is part of it. The whole point of that is to keep plastics in the economy, to retain that value and not let them escape. And we're also very clear, because a lot of RAP's work is about preventing food waste. Plastic does have an important role as packaging. And the carbon footprint, for instance, of a piece of packaging around steak is about 1/60th of the carbon footprint of the steak itself. So what we don't want to see is taking plastic out or going to something else if that leads to more food waste.
Yeah, indeed. We really have to move away and urgently from this linear economy, which is make, use and dispose or throw away. And there is no away. And move quickly now towards a circular economy for plastics, where plastics retains its value at end of life. And to the points raised by Julie, you know, we have to think about the unintended consequences of alternatives. We have to invest up front, looking from a life cycle perspective, that we don't shift concerns around food wastage or adding weight to materials that would generate a higher CO2 footprint.
But doesn't that depend, Kate Geraghty, on technology and how fast technology can come along? This debate is very, very fast moving. We are now having discussions now that we would not have had 5 years ago. And I think the speed of it, my sense is not really, is being driven by consumers more than by government. I think government's trying to come up with policies to match consumer concerns about that. People are watching Blue Planet and things like that, and they're getting awareness of a plastic problem. So with consumer awareness, then industries like yours will be encouraged to think, okay, let's see if we can innovate. Let's come up with new ways of trying to reuse, recycle plastics. What pace is technology moving at right now? I mean, do you get the sense that there is a search for solutions, but the solutions are still quite slow in coming? Or are we beginning to see solutions coming on quite quickly?
I think there's a huge amount going on with my part of the sector, the plastic sector, with brand owners and retailers. You know, people are listening to consumers. They have been horrified, like we are, by the images that they see, and they want to see change, and they want to see it quickly. There's an awful lot going on around the value chain. So from our perspective, designing packaging that's going to be fully recyclable. There's targets in European Union, for example, all packaging on the market needs to be fully recyclable by 2030.
And Dow itself has got a commitment to have 100,000 tonnes by 2025.
Exactly. So recyclable packaging, making available 100,000 metric tons of recycled plastic available to our customers in Europe, whether that's through mechanical or feedstock recycling. Julie indicated that some plastics packaging is difficult to recycle. There's different types of polymers there. And we've got something called compatibilizers, and that makes different polymers that are blended in packaging difficult to recycle. The way I can explain that is it acts a bit like a detergent with oil and water. It enables them to mix so that you can have complex packaging that at the end of their life, they can be recycled. So you still get the functionality that the brand owners require, but it can still be recycled. And then working with the value chain to incorporate recycled content at high concentrations in packaging. But there's challenges to that. So for example, when we talk about incorporating recycled content, there's very strict food contact regulations that prohibit recycled plastic coming into contact with food. And that needs to be addressed. And I think one of the benefits of feedstock recycling is that because you're bringing it back to the starting materials and you're making virgin-like plastic, you'll be able to incorporate that in food packaging. And I think that's one of the major benefits. And the sense of urgency and pull from brand owners and retailers to accelerate that, we really feel it, and we're responding very quickly.
Right. I'm with you, because right now, I mean, the way it's going, it's depressing to think that these plastic bags, yogurt pots and plastic forks would be the chief archaeological relics of our age, you know, that in centuries time they're going to be producing one of these things. But you're saying the technology is advancing to this stage now where one day, I don't know, perhaps in my lifetime, I don't know how fast it will be, that we won't have to put any plastic underground because we'll have thought of new ways of breaking it down and reusing what the components to make the plastic.
Correct. So typically, at the moment, what we see is mechanical recycling. So the plastic packaging is washed, chopped and recycled. And there is degradation with that mechanically recycled plastic. What we're focused on, and we had an announcement there a couple of weeks ago with a company called Phoenix, is that we want to, as a complementary technology to mechanical recycling, offer feedstock recycling. So that's taking plastics waste that frequently now is either incinerated for energy recovery or landfilled, take that back and using processes to convert it into an oil that can be then used to make new plastics packaging that have virgin-like qualities. It's identical to the virgin resin. So you're avoiding extracting fossil fuels from the ground, and you're taking a valuable resource and recycling it, and it can be used in value-added applications such as food packaging again.
Right. So Michelle Norman, is it true that most rigid plastic products like Lucozade bottles, etc., can only be recycled a few times before they lose their original properties and then become non-recyclable?
So when you mechanically recycle PET and you reform it into bottles, that particular process, there'll be a degradation in quality over time, and some of that degradation could be the colour, so the plastic might go slightly yellowy, which is why you always need to introduce an element of new plastic into it so that it can be recycled time and time again. And that's why we're interested in introducing either the plant-based material or, slightly similar to what was just being talked about with feedstock recycling, our company is actually invested in an enzymatic recycling startup consortium that actually uses a natural enzyme to break down the PET, reduces it right down to its base material and get remade into plastic, into new plastic. So you're introducing, again, that virgin element back in, which means you can basically carry on recycling and recycling and recycling your plastic because you're basically always generating a new quality form. But if you were just to rely on mechanically recycling as we know it today, yes, there would be a gradual degradation over time in the quality of your bottles.
To that end, having to add more virgin resin to make up for some of the lack of performance in the mechanically recycled resins, we're developing high performance resins that boost the performance of the mechanical, so you're not adding more weight to the plastic, so you can just mm-hmm. top it up with a little bit of virgin resin of a high quality that takes into account some of the degradation in the mechanical recycling. And you can achieve, for example, in some applications like the stretch wrap that comes around what you see around pallets, up to 50-60% mechanically recycled content.
Right. But Kate, over 300 million tonnes of plastic being produced a year, we're still looking at 90% of it basically going into the ocean or going into the ground. So what we're talking about here isn't likely to change this anytime soon. The realistic alternative is this mound of plastic getting higher and higher, whether in land or whether in sea, for the next 5 of the next 10 years. A problem which is intolerable already, but let's face it, it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
It is going to get worse if we don't take action. And we are taking action.
But not quickly enough, though. Look at the speed of this. It's not going to make an appreciable difference.
We have to move from this make, use, throwaway society and bring plastics into the circular economy. And by that, we mean plastic retains its value at end of life and we reuse it. So we incorporate into plastics packaging. We find value-added applications for it. And we look at increasing the collection of plastic. We're in the UK right now. Maybe we'll touch on that. But there is a dire need. I think one of the reasons that we have this plastics waste in the environment challenge is that we don't have the infrastructure, particularly in some of the emerging economies, to collect and sort and recycle plastics packaging. And that's one of the reasons why, for example, Dow has invested in the Alliance to End Plastics Waste, where we're investing $1.5 billion over the next 5 years to work with NGOs and partners on the ground to ensure that we stop that flow of plastics Sure. waste into the environment and we start working with recyclers and finding value added applications for that recycled plastic. That is an absolute priority.
Well, I don't know if there are any projections on the rate of change here, but if roughly 10% is being recycled now, in 10 years' time, let's face it, it's unlikely to be much higher than 30%. So we are still, sure, you're looking to try to make that bigger and bigger, but we're still looking at a situation where China has now stopped taking Yep. Britain's plastic waste. Maybe other countries will follow suit. So things are going to get a lot worse before they get any better, aren't they?
Well, certainly there's now legally binding targets in Europe on the member states to increase the amount of plastics that's being recycled by 4 times based on a 2015 level. They're legally binding targets. We're also looking at developments in what we call extended producer responsibility, or PRNs in the UK. And this is the fees that brand owners and retailers pay to collect, sort and recycle packaging. That's been revised right now. They're also being incentivized to incorporate recycled content with something we call the eco-modulation of PRN or EPR fees. And that's where brand owners are rewarded by paying a lower EPR fee for putting packaging on the market that's fully recyclable, that incorporates recycled content. In some countries, it involves incorporating bio-based feedstocks. Brand owners and retailers will have to pay a higher EPR fee if it's not packaging that is easy to recycle. So there's a lot of legislative, technical and policy efforts in place to boost the recycling that's going on in Europe.
Right. And Michelle, how many years do you think it will be before your average Lucozade bottle is completely and endlessly recyclable? I mean, when is technology going to allow you to say that you can recycle this bottle of Lucozade as often as you want?
Well, I think the technology, the emerging technology, is right around the corner. As I was talking about at the beginning of the conversation around our investment in enzymatic recycling, as a test, they've already produced the first plastic bottle using 100% enzymatically recycled material. So that is infinitely recyclable, again, in terms of, because it's like a new material. So I think, you know, at scale, that's going to be ready in 2024. So actually, I think it's not too far away. The question comes back to, we need the input, as in we need people to put them in the deposit return scheme or to put them in their household collections. We need the input to ensure that they are recycled time and time again, because the technology is right around the corner. Infrastructure, one would hope, through all the investments that will come through the new regulatory system, such as extended producer responsibility, will hopefully make sure that the infrastructure is in place. The consumer behaviour that we'll see coming through deposit return systems will start to accelerate, and we'll see those changes that we so desperately need. So I think, you know, the building blocks are there. They just now all need to be joined up in the right order at pace.
All right. And finally, Kate Geraghty, can you think of a time where if archaeologists do find a plastic fork, they're going to think, yes, this was obviously a pre-2030 artefact, because after 2030, they did plastics in a different way?
Correct. I think that would be, yeah, it's a great vision to have, and it's certainly one we would share, because plastic waste does not belong in the environment. We want it back, and we want to bring it back to the oil and make new plastics from it.
Michelle Norman, Julie Hill and Kate Geraghty, thanks very much for joining me on this podcast. And thanks to our producer, Cindy Yu.